correction that I had the first night, so that you won't have any wrong information that's down there. The first night, that's about the second chart I used, and I was making a point right here that the technology of the 1990s will teach us more about the mind of man than we've ever known before. Just as that ESO will orbit this decade and give us more information in, I think I said 20 minutes or something, than we have received in the last 25 years. And when I made up the chart, I had taken the notes, and I couldn't find the notes, and then the next day I went in and I found it, and it's 30 hours is the actual fact of what it is. So in the first 30 hours, when this satellite goes up, we will get more information from the outer space than we have in the last 25 years. The point remains the same, that we are entering into the 1990s, which is going to just absolutely blow our mind in things that we learn about the mind of man. And changes will be made in the way we deal with people. In fact, we've learned more about it in the last 10 years than we've known about it, I guess, since Adam, you know, up to that time. You can see it in the way young people even raise their children now, in comparison to the way that I raised them. We just had kids, gave them hamburgers, and let them grow up. And today, why people put forth a great deal of effort, and I'm really happy to see some of the good things that's happened to people that are raising their children today, knowing the damage that you can do by negative teaching and so forth. Another thing that I've read, I think it's about the week after that, was that they have now found that in dealing with depression, in certain kinds of depression, and we'll talk about various kinds of depression in here, but in certain kind of depression, not the medical kind, not the kind of where you need medicine to actually do something to your brain, but in the other types, that a computer has exactly the same results as a psychiatrist. And what they've done is that they have the software on the whole thing, and you sit down and you're depressed, and so it'll ask you a question up there, do you feel this way when certain thing, yes or no, and then it'll say something else, and say something else, and you go through and you answer the questions on it. It's very, very simple, and you talk to the computer, and you type in, you know, that how you feel angry or certain things or so forth. It comes out then, and it does this, and the test that's showing why it says it has equal results in helping people that a psychiatrist has. So the psychiatrists now are trying to assure us that we still need psychiatrists. I don't think that we don't, see. We still need them. But that is something that is now, the software's out, it's coming, and it will be used. Even the psychiatrists are going to be using it. And so just various things that come out like that. Okay, as we get this thing down here in the right way, this is where it goes over here. As we continue down tonight, we're going to be continuing here talking about premarital counseling. This is tremendously important. This morning in the PI came out there, and there was an article in there about this individual who came out and spoke to a bunch of preachers out here in the Seattle area, and is recommending certain changes to be made, and preachers, and these are denominational men, are adopting this and so forth, and it's a lot of good suggestions in it and so forth, but they're trying to pass some kind of a law and a ruling, and it's just getting off of the ground floor, that if a person is going to get married in a church building, and the reason for that is because the preacher is going to have control of the situation, that they must have so many months of counseling, premarital counseling, before they get married. I think that once they come and they make applications, say, we want to get married, I believe it was 6 months that they're advocating that there has to be some counseling set up, so many sessions before, so many sessions after, because they say we're running into the greatest problem that man has ever known, and that is marrying people, and then the divorce rate is just so tremendously high. And so lots of things are changing in the culture that is around about us in this. But people understand the importance of getting into a good, solid marriage. As we talked about this last week, and we're not going to go back over these in any kind of a detail, But we talked about a few things, the teenage aspect of the marriage and all of this. But the whole point right here, can you communicate? That is tremendously important. I had a young man who called me today from another congregation, and talking about that they were getting ready to get married, and they are both around 30 years of age, and they're having some problems. And so he started talking to me about the problems that they're having and so forth, and we love each other and we want to get married and we're buying a house and they're very mature about this and that. But as he was talking here about some of these problems, he said, I just want to get your opinion of what to do and so forth. And then he gets talking about his self-esteem, and when it gets down low, I just freezes up. I just don't talk. I just don't say anything to her. And of course that gets her upset, and then I want some attention and I don't know how to ask for the attention. And the other day, he said, I shouldn't have done this, I know, and I won't in the future, don't think, hope it won't. Going on like this scared her, scared her to try to get her attention. Everybody scares somebody, what do you do? Well, he sneaked up behind her with a knife. And she thought he was going to stab her, and that got her attention. Then they communicated. Now, I'm just telling you this situation. Do you think there's any communication problems? You see that they might be up against. And so he going on talking like this, and I said, "Well, yeah, said, do you see anything in there?" "Yeah, I do. I'd like to talk with you. When do you plan on getting married?" "Well, March, and it's just about the next 2 or 3 weeks." And so fit us in, get us cured, in 3 weeks, so we can have a happy marriage. Is the whole point. Well, I'm totally booked solid until a week from today for sure. I mean, day and night on this. And so that leaves us a couple of weeks. And why don't you go talk to somebody? But in other words, you can see the point that I'm getting at. Now, that marriage, what's the chances of that marriage not having lots of problems? Even if it turns out and lasts, it's going to have tremendous problems. And the communication that is in there. Okay. We then talked about the addiction problem, and I'll not even put these things up there, and we can understand the significance of the addiction that's in there. Tonight, I want to talk just a little bit about sexual problems. These are problems that you have to face in there. And as a society degenerates, which our society has done, there always arises a great amount of sexual problems. We see it back in Genesis 19 with Sodom and Gomorrah. With all the sin that they were involved in, we finally then read about the great degree of homosexuality they had in that place. Now, all of us can look back, 10, 15 years ago, and could you have even dreamed that the homosexual problem would be as it is today? If just something that beyond the mind of man. You couldn't even dream of such a thing happening. And yet it has happened. In Romans, the first chapter, there we have Paul telling that is how that generation degenerated down. And so when you have a nation in decay, a society that is degenerating, just mark it down, you're going to have a lot of sexual problems. Now, we are degenerating and we are going down in that way. As you look at it, here are some things to really think about and try to call attention to young people in this activity. Now, think about the problems that young people have to face today. 1 out of every 10 men are homosexuals. Now, that seems to be a pretty established fact. It's something that I could not believe when I first started hearing it and reading it and so forth. I thought, there's not 1 in 10,000 that would be, but there seems to be 1 out of every 10 men that are homosexuals. Now, for the young girls, just to start out with, what are their chances of having some sexual problems as a young girl, 16 years old, goes out and starts dating? Just knowing that one aspect of it. Now, what are those homosexuals going to do? See, they're 16, they're 18 also. Are they going to tell the young girl, no, I have homosexual tendencies, and so I'm not going to get married. Is that what they're going to say? No. No, they're going to get married. They're going to get married to try to cure their homosexuality. See, that's the problem. They think, if I do that, then that will cure me, and I'll have this monkey off of my back, and everything will be all right. And so they get married, and then it's just as repulsive to them as it was before, and sexual problems then are going to come to pass. Now, number two, one out of every three young girls are molested by a family member. Now, as I'm talking about, this is worldwide. This is in the world, and I'm confident that in the church it is not like this, not this bad. But in the world, this is it. Now, if you take one out of every 10 men who are homosexuals in a society, then one out of every three girls are molested by a family member. Now, you might say, what does that have to do with sexual problems? Well, what does it have to do? Is it going to cause sexual problems in the marriage? Tremendous problems. Just absolutely tremendous problems. Problems that you just cannot believe or conceive of, that these girls are going to have in their mind, and many of them carry them all of their life. They take them to the grave. Then, in addition to the homosexuals, there are some men who walk dress up in women's clothing at home, and they're not homosexuals. They don't have homosexual tendencies. They are heterosexuals. They're happy with their wife as long as they can dress up in her clothing. Now, you wives, think about that. What's that like? Your husband come home and, honey, I love you and so forth, or your nylons. It's going to cause problems, see? These are things people are going through right now. Number four, some men want to hit and beat a wife when they're having sex. Now, others beat them just to be beat them in various times. But there are some men, and quite a significant number of men, that have to beat on their wives, inflict pain somehow or another, in order to have sexual satisfaction. One of the great things that you find that's coming out of the closet now all the time is that men tying up women for the sexual activity. They tie them up and then hit them and so forth. And the girls in the world, they write into Ann Landers and they give good advice. You know what their advice is? The girls in the world? They say, make sure that you have full trust in a man before you ever go to his apartment and permit him to tie you up. Because otherwise, you'll get in a lot of trouble. Because a lot of them just beat you half to death. See? And they tell you how nice they are. So the advice is, make sure you get to know a guy and you have a lot of trust in him before you ever let him tie you up. Now, I'm telling you, life is degenerating, you see, in this. And that's the advice that you get. Now, number five, some want to have sex all the time and some do not want to do this at all. You will find that there are just people that cannot be satisfied, and then there are other people that get married and they do not want to have any sexual relations at all. Now, either one is going to cause all kinds of problems. And then number six, thank goodness there are some normal people out there that can have a wonderful sexual life. But my whole point of this chart is just this. Are there sexual problems in the world today? See? Think about it. Now, who do we convert? Think about this. And don't think about your sons and daughters. See, that's not the ones that we're worried about. Think about, who do we convert? When you go out and you convert somebody, a couple tomorrow that's 35 years of age, who have you converted? You've converted people that come out of that. And you're hoping that they're number six. But you find out so many times that they're not. So always keep that in mind when you're thinking about this. And then the scary thing is, all these people want to get married. They want to get married because they want to be able to cure their problem, whatever it is, in the marital realm. So you will have that problem just constantly. Okay. Well, here's another one I'm going to get right here. As you're talking to young people, find out what kind of music they play. You say, what does that have to do with marriage? Well, will it have anything to do with marriage? Can it cause a great deal of harm? Music has a very special relationship to the life of a human being. There's something different about music than just reading a book or something of this nature. It goes right into the heart and soul of man and plucks their emotions and makes them either feel good or bad. Now, it's a well-known fact that you can give a musician, a songwriter, a goal to achieve and tell him, I want you to write a song and we're going to play it at the fair or a football game or just on the radio, and we want to make people mad, or we want to make them happy, or we want to make them sad, something, and they can write songs to do this, can they not? And the hippie movement, that's where the rock and roll came out of, the anger and the frustrations and trying to get people to rebel. And so they wrote their songs to do that. When you have these songs that you hear, and guys going down the street now with whatever that equipment is, you know, that just makes those windows jar as they're going down through there, that tells you what is in their mind. It tells you what's in their mind just as much as if you went up and said, tell me what's in your mind. And they told you. There's some things you don't need to ask. And music tells that. Now, when you when a guy is going to play the loud metal rock and so forth, young lady needs to understand she's not going to change him. She's going to have a lot of problems. Another thing that you can look for in your marital counseling is what are called givers and takers, and these are just two personality traits that people have. There's neither one is good and neither one is bad. Every giver needs a taker and every taker needs a giver. And every taker has some giver qualities and every giver has some taker qualities. There are very few people that just want to take all the time. There are those kind of people that are just totally selfish. But you will find as you study these traits that you can pretty well analyze people and tell where problems lie in going at it in a situation of just analyzing givers and takers and get the people, those people, to think about themselves. What kind of personality trait do we have? Why would a giver, that is somebody who wants to give, why would they marry a taker, somebody who wants to take? To please whom? Yeah, that's it. It makes me feel good. I found somebody I can give to. See? And I want to give, and that makes me feel good. Now, the taker that I married, what do they want? They want to take, so it makes them feel good. Now, so far, that's good. And there has to be a relationship built upon the giver and the taker. Your best and happiest relationship is when a giver is married to a taker. If you have two takers married, wow, you're going to have a lot of problems. If you have two givers, you'll have less problems, but you can have a lot of problems in there. And this is where the woman may break down and cry because the husband brings her too many roses or gets her too many gifts or takes her out to dinner too often. You hear that too much on there? You don't hear of it too much, but it happens. I can assure you that it happens, and sometimes a woman will almost have a mental breakdown because the husband does so much more for her than she does for him that she just can't stand it. See? And so there's either way you go, well, you'll find that there are problems that can evolve in there. So what you do is really in this, as I've got up here, is don't confuse selfishness with strength. One brings happiness, and the other brings misery. Now, a person can be a strong person and be a taker or a giver, either one. But there is such a thing as just plain old selfishness. And when an individual is just truly selfish, why then there's going to be problems that are involved in them. Does the other person want to always get their way? And that's a reasonable question because there are some people that just, yes, they always want to get their way. And they will get their way one way or the other. They learn how to manipulate. They learn how to insult. They learn how to cry and demand sympathy. And they will get their way even at the time when they're saying, we'll do whatever you want to do. You know, whatever you want to do. Where do you want to go to dinner tonight? And so the lady said, well, I'd like to go to the Chinese place. Oh, would you? I guess we can. That place makes me sick. Oh, well, honey, if you don't want to go there, where would you like to go? Well, I feel more like a steak tonight. Well, then let's go to the Sizzler. Okay. You know, are you sure that's what you want to do? Yeah, that's what I want to do. Let's go to the Sizzler. Well, I want to do what you want to do. Well, yeah, let's go to the Sizzler. So they go to the Sizzler because that's what she wanted to do. And now this happens like this, and then it gets worse and worse and worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And he will think of every situation he can to do this. So have to analyze that. That's something that is an interesting thing to study.
Well,
yeah.
Do you find that in a lot of situations, if a person is maybe a taker in one area of life, that maybe they'll be a total giver in another area, and opposites, so that really there is a balance, but sometimes one thing is just more pronounced and you don't see it when you're really just talking to people initially? Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the problem with this, that you can't just analyze and say, okay, you are a taker and you are a giver. And it never fades. It can be that you're a giver in one area and a heavy taker in another area. And that's the problem. There's nothing about us that is absolute.
I mean, maybe someone comes to you and says, well, she just takes everything uh-huh. that makes she takes or something
right.
like that. But maybe she's giving so much in another area but when someone comes to you with a problem, mm-hmm. that isn't what's discussed. And sometimes uh-huh. it's never searched uh-huh. out and found. It's just always uh-huh. kind of put on one person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's true. And so you have to watch it, because that's where the problems finally they develop and they keep going and going. It doesn't start out that way. It doesn't start out that she is a taker. She just takes all of my money, you know, and spends it on herself. It doesn't start out that way. It starts out generally that he's abusing her in a lot of other areas. And so for her to try to make it up, she then tries to take whatever she can in whatever area she can get it in. And in this case, it may be money. He may let her have it. Or it may be some other area. But she then will try to do this to appease herself. And then she will go overboard and take more. And then that will make him angry. And then he then will start taking more in this other area. Well, then I'll show you. And then finally, it's just an impasse. That really is not a problem of giver and taker that you have. That's a maximum problem that you end up with down there. Mm-hmm. But if you can see, and you can pretty well tell people as you look at them and how they treat each other and what they say and so forth, just in a few minutes, which one really is a giver and which one is a taker, and then see is it off balance, because you should have a giver and a taker, but is it off balance? Is it where he is working her around? So if you see this 19-year-old getting ready to get married, and he's working that girl around all the time, and she's going to give him all this, and she's going to change him after the wedding, then you know you've got a problem. See, coming in. But
don't you think maybe a giver and a taker might be created and still born that way by the way parents raise kids?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They are finding more all the time. This is something that will be interesting in 10 years from now. But they're finding that you're born with these traits. You're born with certain personality traits, and then obviously you develop certain personality traits, you know, that's around about you. And when you put them together, right now we really don't know what to do with young kids in those ages. But you can tell it. And here's a young kid that it just becomes a taker almost at birth. I can think of one little child and mama knows it and all that, and we talk about it a lot, that from the day the kid was born is a total absolute taker. And she's working on him and working on him, and just so obvious that, you know, it can't be. And it's something that really amazes me, and I'm studying the kid quite a lot to look at that, but I've never seen anything like this one. But just from birth, well, it happened. There's another hand up back over here. Okay. Now then, let's go in to this other situation that I want to talk about, and to give you some information here that you'll have on the most important thing that you can do to individuals in getting married. It just make sure that they marry a Christian. You can look at it. So we've got here that the guy can be dumb, he can be happy, he can be ugly, he can have anything that he wants to have, but there is something that you have to really make sure of, and that is this, and that is that if you don't marry a Christian, you're in trouble. And just write that down. Now, we are in a situation of where I think the Bible is so full of examples of this that shows that it just has to be that way. As you go back in Genesis 6th chapter, the flood, I'm impressed with the fact that every thought and imagination of men's heart was evil continually. But what does it attribute to when you get right back up there? What happened? The sons of God saw the daughters of men and saw that they were fair and took them to be their wives. And here you have men who were sons of God, children of God, trying to please God, looked over and saw women who were not trying to please God, and they saw that they were pretty, and they took them to be their wife. And that's when the trouble started. Now, I'm going to get down here and skip over just a few of these things to get right here to the facts of this. Okay, put this up here. Now, as you begin to talk about marrying a Christian, you can say, look, Noah, happened in Noah's day, it happened in Ezra's day, the Apostle Paul said in 1 Corinthians, the 9th chapter, have we not a right to lead about a wife? What was his only stipulation? Who is pretty? No. Who is a sister? See, have we not a right to lead about a wife who is a sister, a Christian? That's the one that is talking about. Now people will say, but I know of somebody who didn't marry a Christian and it just turned out wonderful. You know, it just turned out wonderful. You'll hear that all the time. That's my point up here. Of two or three cases where a person married someone who was not a Christian, it turned out wonderful. Just remember one thing. Nobody knows more than two or three. I mean, that's it. But everyone could give many examples of terrible marriages. Not once in 100 times will it turn out good. And all studies show that one of the major causes of marital problems is that the partners have different religious beliefs. That is across the board. Whether you're a Jew, whether you're a Gentile, Methodist, Catholic, whatever you are, all studies show that when you try to cross any two religions, that you are going to have marital problems. And the divorce rate just shoots right out through the sky. You can take two Methodists and they get married and the divorce rate will be pretty low. Two Baptists, the divorce rate will be pretty low. Have this Baptist to marry this Methodist and the divorce rate just shoots right out of the sky. And so it's not just Christians, but it's across the board when people of different religions do get married. Very seldom do you find that it really works and that you have a happy marriage. Now, just to illustrate this, I don't call any names, but not too long ago, in fact, when you were having the class in here on 1 Corinthians and studied their 2 Corinthians, studied 2 Corinthians in the, come ye out from among them, be ye not equally yoked together. And this lady, who had been married to a person who's not a Christian for years and years, 50, 60 years, came and just poured her heart out. Just tell people, don't ever do that. What a miserable life that I've had. And people look around and think that they have a beautiful life. And she's wanting to know, should I divorce him right now? You know, oh, man, he probably got 2 years left. In fact, I made plans for her funeral today, to be truthful with you. And her request, I'm not trying to be funny, but should I divorce him? It's just a horrible thing, and tell people, and just and on and on and on and on. And you find that all the time. And so I just can't tell you really the chances of having a bad marriage. This right here is what I used as an illustration that you've already seen right here. That is, that I'll come back to something like this, and that is, I got kicked by a horse once and never felt a thing. And he knocked me about as far or so from here to that door. But I was right up next to the horse, and he turned around and just gently laid his hoofs in my stomach. And when I say gently, he kicked as hard as he could, but pulled him up like this, and then when he kicked, I was already on the hoof, and he just lifted me off the ground right out into a big bush that was out there. I never got hurt at all. Got up and went over, and he flipped back and tore the railing off my porch, and I caught my horse and took him to the barn. Now, what would you say about a guy standing behind a horse? I mean, I'm living proof. You don't get hurt if a horse kicks you, you see? Down here I read about a guy who shot himself in the head 22 times and it never killed him. How would you recommend that? In other words, you can find anything that comes to pass. You can find some people who do marry outside of Christ and they'll have a happy marriage, but it's just about like shooting your head in there. Now, in the Seattle Times, right here this last year, we have up here that only one of three of today's first-time marriages can be expected to last, according to a new study that says divorce and separation have been underreported. And he goes ahead talking about all of these things right here. Over here, an age of marriage is among the greatest factors. Their study said with divorce and separation, twice as likely for women who marry as teenagers. Overall, second marriages were 25% more likely to break up than first marriages. And so there's just a lot of things to think about in these marriages breaking up. Now, there was a study in Oklahoma. These are kind of revealing right here. They made a study in Oklahoma, in Miami, Oklahoma, where in 1974, they had 70 Christians in a Miami church who married non-Christians. And out of that, 49 left the church, 21 have remained faithful, 12 converted their mates, 5 have not converted them, and 19 have ended in divorce. Now, these are Christians. Then, at the same time, they had 49 other people who married Christians. Out of 49, 45 are faithful, 3 have become unfaithful, and 2 marriages ended in divorce. Now, you look at that and you see that. Then, they said, maybe they should take a study over 20 years. So they went back over their records in the past 20 years, and in 77, then they came out with this, that 143 have married in the past 20 years up there. Then you have the 79 married non-Christians, 57 have left the church, 25 divorced, 22 are still faithful, 14 have converted their mates. And then down there, you only have the 2 that is divorced. So, what we find is, 1 out of 3 marriages ends in divorce according to the national average. 1 in 50 ends in divorce among couples who are married in church and attend regularly. Now, this is any church. See, it doesn't have to be the Lord's church. Then, however, among couples who are married in church, attend regularly, and have family worship, 1 in 1,105 ends in divorce. Now, is that revealing? Does that tell us anything? See, as you look at that. So what we have then in today's culture, as they say 1 out of 3, and then they're telling us now that 52% of the divorce rate across the nation, all around, and among those who have the same faith, they prayed together, played together, went to the same kind of religious service together, the divorce rate was 1 in 1,000. Which means 1 in 1,000 instead of 520 in 1,000. That's what the normal is. So it's all there. There's no way that anybody, by reading the Bible, can say, "Oh, I think it would be all right for a Christian to marry somebody who's not a Christian," or just look out among them and not even read the Bible and come to a logical conclusion. You see that is the case. There's just no way that can possibly be. So as you're looking at this, make sure that you don't get caught up in permitting really this kind of marriage. In here, the mate will affect every aspect of your life, every day of your life. There is a principle, just kind of like gravity, 1 Corinthians 15:33. The evil one will corrupt the righteous rather than the righteous converting the evil. Now, are there ever an exception to that? Well, certainly anybody can give an exception to that, you see. But as you give an exception to that, then you find you give me one exception, and then I can give you 50 of the way that it actually works. Now, Paul gave that, and Paul said, "Be not deceived, evil communication," meaning evil association, "corrupts good morals." It is that simple. It's always been that way, and that's what all those scriptures are down there for. It's always been that way, that when evil or good associated with evil, the evil corrupted the good. What happened in the days of Israel? When God told him, you go into the land of Canaan, and he told him, how many of the Canaanites were they to drive out? Every one of them. How many could they keep as a slave? As a woodcutter? Not a one. See, not a one of them. But they went in and they decided they would keep a few slaves. Now, business-wise, that's smart, isn't it? You see, to have a few slaves in there and to do your work and all this, business-wise, it looks okay. But you and I know the end result. See, the end result is that here's the evil, and the evil corrupted the good, and Israel then apostatized and was finally, God had to divorce them. He said, put them away because of their evil. All right. Now, we're down to this chart right here, and this is one that I want to finish on here tonight, and that is, as you are counseling people, right here is a chart or seven areas that you can use. If you're wondering, what do I do, what do I say, up to this time, I've given all those things that you kind of analyze and look for. If two teenagers come in, they're going to get married, let that click in your mind, teenager, and then bring it out. What should I say to these kids? And how do I go about saying it and so forth? Think about all of these things, but right here, as you sit down in your actual counseling, keep this in mind, that according to the psychologist's list, which is a general list that, across country, the psychologists have found that there are the seven areas that create more problems in a marriage than anything else. Now, they're not the only ones that create problems, but they will create more problems than anything else. Now, their analysis of it is this. They will tell us that if your marriage has one of these things wrong with it, you have one wrong with it, you can make it. Your marriage can be held together. But if your marriage has two of these things wrong with it, you are in serious problems. And if it has three, you're going to get a divorce. That's their analysis of how this situation is. All right, now, as you start out and you begin to look at that, first of all is religion. That's the one that they will put at the top. That if you are of different religions, your chances of making it are just almost nil, really. But it has been going, and you can make it. Now, first of all, I want you to think about it there, that if you have religious differences, what kind of problems will come up? First of all, what other problems will develop? Let's suppose two people are united totally in all of these things. The only thing that they have is religious problems. What other kind of problems will the religious problems cause in the next 5 years?
Everyone except maybe two.
Children. Okay. You're not going to go through there without having a whole lot of problems in there, right? As you start out, and here, will it affect your friends? She goes to over here, and he goes over there, and then he wants to bring his buddies home who are Buddhist or something, and she's a devout Baptist. Now, I'm just leaving it out of the realm of a true Christian. See, there's going to be problems that are going to be involved in it. I don't want to be around that kind of person out there. What about finances? Will they be brought in? John, what do you say if Julie converts to Methodist Church next week? Yeah, she's not taking any of my money. She can go if she wants to, but not taking any of mine. How would you feel if she did and she said, "Now, John, I want to contribute $100 Sunday." What would you do? It's going to be a problem, right? See, now you're going to try to be fair and think. Now, I know this is half her money. I mean, she works for it and so forth. Are you going to be fair and you're going to let her contribute that? Now, you just stop to think. And it goes against every grain in your body, doesn't it? It goes against every grain in your body. And so, yeah, you're going to have financial problems. What about children problems? Problems that you never think about until you have those children. Two people get married, and, oh, we're going to have children, but our children are going to be nice, and we're going to, both of us, you know, have our input in there and so forth. And then all of a sudden, you get married, and you find you love those kids. And you don't know that you love kids until you have kids. And then finally, here Mama has the kids, and she loves those kids, and so does Dad. And now then Dad sees her taking them off and teaching them something absolutely contrary to the Bible. And so he then's going to straighten out the kids. And she looks at them, and he's teaching them something absolutely contrary to the Bible. Are there going to be any problems? There's going to be problems. So if you have religious problems, you're going to have religious, you're going to have friends, you're going to have finances, you're going to have children. You going to have any recreation problems? Yeah, you're going to have recreation problems. What about in-laws? She and her family are Baptist, and me and my folks are Christians. We going to have any in-law problems? Yeah. In other words, if you start out, two people start out, everything is just perfect and all that except religion. Do you see what you're going to be dealing with in 5 years? That's the reason it's just almost an impossibility. Okay, now go through there and start talking about religion. And if the two people are Christians, is there any need of talking about it any further? They're both members of the church. Yeah, there's still a need to go ahead and talk about it. And you can bring it up, and you need to bring it up gently and say, "Now, I just want to bring up a few things and just ask you this, and let's talk about it right now, you know, so that it doesn't go out any farther, and let's see if there's anything." So you don't know of any doctrines that you disagree on? No, don't know, you know, any at all. And that's wonderful. Is there anything that you argue about? You know, do you ever have any argument? Have you ever had an argument about religion? Well, yeah, just. You know, and they're looking at just that one time, wasn't it? Yeah. Now, what does that tell you? I mean, we only had that one. Yeah. Don't let it pass. The reason they had that one argument is because there was a difference in there. And so, what was it about? Well, she thinks that instrumental music is all right, but she said she would go with me. But she thinks it's all right. Well, do you really feel that it is? Well, yeah, I do. Okay. Do you feel that he forces his issue on you a little bit too heavy? Yeah. Is that what caused the argument? Yeah, he won't let it lay. Do you see a problem? You see, as it's coming up here, and some of these days she's going to show him. And she's going to go to First Christian Church just to show him, "You're not going to be telling me." There's a hundred little things that you can find in there. What are the chances today of a young girl getting married and having a very liberal viewpoint on women's place in the church? What's the chances? I'm talking about a Christian girl. Very, very good. That's another problem I had to deal with today. and dealing with it, don't think I'm saying I solved anything when I'm talking about dealing. These are just things that we just got started on today. But great, great big problems You see that come in there. And so you begin to talk about this. I think I started to tell you one time back there at the very beginning about those two that I was counseling. I forget now what their problem was. It was so cute the way it was brought out. And I asked them, you know, it's not been very long ago. My mind is really, really great. It's very real cute. You don't have any religious practice? No, none at all. And so you don't argue about anything? No, never have. Well, you know, there was a time, but there's no problem. What do you think about it? And you start asking like that, and then you watch the kids and see if their eyes sparkle, see if the frown comes on their face, or a smile goes away, or she turns her head, or there are so many ways that you communicate. 85% of whatever you say is done by body language. 15% by what the words are. So don't pay much attention to words. Look at the body language. And when you see her sitting there and she just oogly-eyed, you know, at him, you know everything's going okay, but all of a sudden something comes and she goes, you know that means great, big, big trouble. You see that's out there. And so don't let it drop. But deal with the religious. Then you get into friends. And any problem with friends? Oh, no. No problem with friends. Now, why am I starting out every one of these with no? That's what everyone will tell you. Every time when you ask them, you know the answer will be no. Oh, no problem there. Now, that doesn't mean a thing. You can say, okay, so then there's just no problems. No. You ask her, any problems? No. Now, here's what she means by that. She means, I don't like those no good lapses that he's hanging around with, but I will accept it for a period of time until I can get rid of it. That's what she means. There's no problem that I can't solve. See, that's what she means. So, in this one case, I remember this one, so I'll tell you. Any problem with friends? No? No? Okay, you got to know? No, everything's fine. And Dr. Hurst said, does he have any friends that you don't like? Well, there's a couple, you know, that, but they'll be all right. Now, what does that tell you? See, when they start answering it like that. Well, why don't you tell me about it? What is it you don't like? And so, well, it's a couple guys here at work, and so he pipes up. He says, she doesn't want me to run around with these guys. You know, they're down there at work, and I work with them all day, and then sometimes on Saturday afternoon, why, I'll invite them over. I mean, come on over and have a glass of tea, and I try to help them, you know, study the Bible, and I correct them, and so forth. They quit their cussing, and at least when they're around me, and so forth. Well, that didn't sound too bad, you know. Then you ask her, and then you find out, you know, a little bit more. Then you find out, well, it's not that. It's the girl. You got a friend who's a girl. Well, yeah, you know, but there's no problem. I mean, it's all off. What do you mean it's all off? Well, our relationship. Oh, you had a relationship. And you still have some kind of relationship. No, we severed our relationship, but we're still good friends. And talk on the phone all the time. And how do you feel about that? You know, well, she's okay. She feels okay because I've explained it to her. Oh, well, that's good. That's great. You feel okay about that? You enjoy, you know, her calling him? And then her eyes start sparkling, you see? And you come out. And so then we had to have a little session here on what you do with old girlfriends. And so these things, I mean, actually happen, and they bring them into marriages like that. Finances. Any problems on that? The best way, I think, to deal with that is to have them to make out a budget. Because when you ask them, do you have any financial problems? No. Uh-uh. Okay, great. It's just that simple. So you don't have it. Make plenty of money. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Would you, now the next time, then they come back, would you bring me back a detailed budget so I know every penny? I want to know every penny that you're going to spend. And if you don't put it down, then I'm going to ask you about it, you see in here. And then bring back here what you're making and so forth, and we'll add it up, and everything will be fine. So you're not loaded down with debts or anything. No, no, it's fine. What about credit cards? You have any credit cards? And this guy I'm thinking about now, as soon as I said credit cards, he goes, and you knew he'd hit a soft spot. And you ever have it? Well, yeah, I have had, but I'm going, and well, let's talk a little bit about credit cards. And so you talk a little bit about them, and you find that really a credit card is not a debt. See, the only thing that's a debt is Sears and Roebuck or a new car. But credit cards aren't debts. That's how you spend money with a credit card, and then you pay them off and whenever you get ready, and then they're way down there in debt and so forth. And so by talking to them then like this and asking, and what I'm trying to point out is you have to ask. And don't be nasty, don't be insulting in any way, but feel free to ask a lot of questions and then watch body action. That's what you have to watch in your premarital counseling. The sexual problems, of course, you're hoping that there are none at this stage. Children, you can talk about...
Well, are these still arranged in order? I would have thought finances would be a bigger problem than friends.
No, I don't think that they're really arranged. I don't know if they're arranged in order from there on. I know that religion is number one. Yeah, and I couldn't really say for sure about the other. Then you can talk about children. Of course, you're not going to solve much about children now, except maybe ask a few questions. You see about them. Do you want to have children? Yeah. How many would you like to have? And he wants 4 and she wants 14, or vice versa, generally the way it is. And kind of check and see whether you can detect any problems. And it's not a big problem if a guy said, oh, I want 10 kids. You know, I've always wanted a lot of kids. And she said, well, I want 2. That's not a real big deal, because generally after the guy gets the first kid, he changes his mind, see, and decides he doesn't want that many, and so forth. But you can talk to them. And if he hates children, you know, now that's a problem. No, you know, I don't want any children. I hate kids. And she loves kids. There's going to be a problem that you've got to deal with in that. In the recreation realm, what kind of problems can you anticipate there? They're both Christians. Both going to be coming to church. They're not going to be skipping Sunday. What kind
he
of
recreation? Wants to sleep in a tent. She wants to sleep in the hill.
Right. That's it. See, he wants to rough it, and I like to go with him. But we go over there and sleep on the ground, and he takes pride in that, and washing his face in the river, and I just can't stand it. And so there'll be some problems you see in that particular situation. Could there be any problems in him being an extreme fishing nut or hunting nut or something, spending all the money you see on that? And yeah, then the money starts flowing out in there. So you can kind of detect some things along that line. What about in-laws? Going to be any problems there? Yeah, going to be problems. You see that's in there, so you watch for it. And what are you going to do about in-law problems? Suppose she said, my mom doesn't like him. You're going to say, well, then don't marry him. No, you have to leave your father and your mother. But keep this in mind, that how do young people generally react that way? Her mom doesn't like him. He's not good enough for my daughter, and so forth. How do they generally react, a young person? It's not going to be with a lot of maturity. It's going to be coming back and setting her in her place. I'm the husband, and I'm going to marry her whether you like it or not. And here's what we're going to do. And then mama's not going to like that. He's not going to like that. And back and forth it goes. So take a little time if you detect that there are problems, and try to get the young person to act responsibly. And try to get them to show them, if you'll do this now, if you will eat your pride now and act maturely, and I know it'll go against every grain in your body and you don't like it, and I wouldn't like it if I were in your shoes and so forth, but if you will do this now, you can have the next 50 years of good life. But if you don't do it now, then you're going to pay for this down the line. You're going to pay for it in agony and so forth, and things that you never think about. And try to get them to go to the parents and talk to them and apologize and go about it somewhat in a more humble situation. Try to work out the problem the best you can, but they may not be able to work out all of it. But the whole point is just to go down and talk about it and try to analyze it in that way and just use those kind of seven basic points of guidelines that if there are problems in there, then there are going to be some serious marital problems. Okay, any comment or question? Mm-hmm.
Is there some program here at Kirkland for young people in this area? Maybe they're not considering marriage to a particular person, but these are good things for high school students or 9th and 10th grade classes to be going through. They don't listen to their parents. Their parents can tell them these things mm-hmm. over and over and over. And just like you're talking about jealousy and oh, if you don't like the young man, it's only because who knows why. But, mm-hmm. you know, so helping them to see that from other people's perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something the elders have considered?
Because well, yeah, as you well know, you know as much about our history as I do. Of course, you try to cover it in sermons. You try to cover it in various classes that you're in and so forth. To set it aside and try to deal with it on a yearly basis, obviously, we don't do that. The young ladies now have gone to Helen recently and said, would you please teach us, you know, class? And so I think they're going to start that on Sunday night after services a little bit later on some various things along this line. I guess that's the answer to your question, is that we try to treat it, but it's not anything that's given a tremendous priority.
Well, I was going to say, it's more of a suggestion
mm-hmm.
on, you know, like high school class. Uh-huh. Is it something that you could see for the near
yeah.
future is, mm-hmm. is to do something like
oh,
that?
Oh, yeah, sure. Oh, yeah. No, I think these things need to be dealt with then for high school kids. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And another thing, I think that young people are more receptive to that now than they were 5 years ago, 4 years ago, or something. I'm happy with the attitude of young people, the way that I see the maturity of young people. And I'm serious when I talk about young kids, and I see, you know, my children and people my children's age is what I mean. And it's just right down the line. I mean, you look around and you see it all around. You know, if it were just one family or two families or something, but the kids aren't perfect. They're never going to be perfect. But I tell you that they're the young parents, you know, today are really putting forth a great effort in doing that. And I see teenagers much more receptive to teaching of this nature than what they were.
And are they more receptive to other teachers, don't you?
Yeah, I think so. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they're always receptive to other teachers more than to dad and mom. Yeah, right. They don't come around that until 25, 30, something like that. Okay, anything else? Let's see, you had a...
Yeah. I just want to ask a question. Does anybody ever come in and you just go right down through that and say, yep, everything's just perfect, and just
mm-hmm.
sit in front of the altar and there?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It happens.
Uh-huh. And you know something's wrong, but you can't find it. You know, they will say, nope. Yeah. And you know something is wrong when you... get in there and you get it too good like that. But obviously you're going to find some that really don't have a problem, you know, that they're mature and they've got their finances well, they're making a lot more money than I'm making, and you know, they do this and that, and so yeah, it happens, but generally you'll find some problems that are in there. Okay, anything else? Okay, if not, then we'll go out of this then next week and start in then in the regular counseling techniques. And now we'll get into marital problems. We've got them married off now, and they're happily married, and we send them off, and next week we're going to bring them in fighting. And then we'll deal with that. Okay, class dismissed.